This is Red Ice Radio, a beacon of sanity from Northern Europe. RedIceCreations.com.
Good day to you, my friends and dear listeners. I'm Henrik, and you are listening to Red Ice Radio. You will find more on RedIceCreations.com, radio archives, news, and a whole lot more. We look at different perspectives with different lenses, trying to get a better view of many of the inconsistencies, anomalies, and mysteries of this world. We go from the infrared to the ultraviolet and occasionally into the X-ray spectrum as well. Today we're talking with Katie Diolos and Andrea Hernandez about RFID spy chip tracking in schools. Katie is a member of Caspian, Consumers Against Supermarket Privacy Invasion and Numbering. She's a colleague of Catherine Albrecht, a privacy expert and award-winning author. And she's with us together with Andrea Hernandez, a brave young San Antonian who is concerned about her privacy and security. At the John Jay High School where she attends, they have now decided to force mandatory RFID tracking cards upon students, and Andrea is saying no to this. We'll talk more about her story and experience, but we'll begin with Katie to discuss the basics of RFID technology and then move on to the privacy and security issues. All right, welcome to Red Ice Radio, Katie Diolos. First of all, we'll say hi to you first. Good to have you with us, and thank you for taking the time talking with us today, Katie.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You bet. And then we also have Andrea with us, joining us from San Antonio as well. Hi, Andrea. How are you today?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you, Andrea. Glad to have you along here. And Andrea, if you just stay with us for a little bit here in the beginning, I want to cover some of the background here first before we get to you and talk more about your story, what's happening at your school and so forth, because we need to bring potential people up to speed here. I'm not going to assume that everybody knows what this topic is about here. We haven't talked about RFID technology specifically and implantable microchips for some time now, although under the umbrella of transhumanism, which we have talked about quite a bit. This is a vital component, of course, in this area. But Katie, maybe you can just give our listeners the background to this topic, tell us how you've got involved in this, and just give us the definition of RFID and these implantable microchip, Katie.
Sure. Well, RFID stands for radio frequency identification. And so essentially, these are microchips that transmit a signal through radio waves, basically. And my work started alongside Dr. Catherine Albrecht, who's the author of Spy Chips, and also the founder of Caspian, which is Consumers Against Supermarket Privacy Invasion and Numbering. And so the implantable microchips, thankfully, aren't being used in San Antonio yet, but they are embedding RFID microchips, active microchips, in student ID cards. And active means that the signal is powered, has an onboard power system. So these microchips have two batteries on board that are actively transmitting a signal upwards of, geez Louise, 70 feet versus passive RFID, which I think most people are familiar with. You'll see that on people who have their badges at work where they have to kind of tap the badge against a reader device. The reader device activates the tag in that context.
Indeed. Now, what kind of, many components of this, what kind of information can be stored on these chips, Katie? How much data are we talking about?
Oh, wow. Well, I think that just depends. usually, based on what I know, and again, the real experts on this technology are going to be Dr. Catherine Albrecht and Chris Padgett, who've done incredible research. But oftentimes, what it'll be is some sort of number that's associated with these passports, the electronic passports that now have RFID embedded in them. I know they have this in Sweden and have for a number of years already, and it's starting to become mandatory here in the United States as well. You know, that has access to like social security numbers. For instance, it's going to be uniquely identified to the person. These IDs that are being used in San Antonio are just randomly assigned numbers, which, again, can be used. A lot of people will say, oh, it's no big deal. It's just a random number. It's not broadcasting, you know, the student's name or grade level or anything like that.
Right.
But, again, it's a unique number that is assigned to one student, and then it makes it very easy for tracking purposes. So it just depends. It could be biometric data. It could be, you know, a simple number. It just depends on what the program is.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned passports, and of course, we're going to get into this with the school RFID badges here. But first, before we do that, what is the reasoning, I guess, behind this technology that you've heard about, Katie? There's a few different places that they have been implemented. There are some industries that are looking at this, but maybe we can just break down a little bit about how it actually is beneficial to those who are trying to promote this technology.
Yeah, that's a great point. Simply, RFID technology is used for tracking and monitoring purposes. Whether it's inventory in a store, say like Walmart or Tesco, or cattle, you know, livestock.
Yeah.
So it genuinely is just for tracking and monitoring. A store, the reason a retail environment would want to use this type of technology, and they have been doing this as well. I think Tesco, I think it's on antichips.com, but Tesco, they had a future store in Germany, and the shelving units had reader devices built in, and the items, they were tagged on the item level, and so they were able to monitor when an individual item was lifted off the shelf, and then reader devices placed throughout the store are able to track where that particular item is traveling around the store, ultimately to see, you know, whether or not it's purchased or if it's stolen, you know, so shrink.
Yeah,
in retail terms.
Exactly, and they've been doing it in the production lines for a long time. They claim that this is basically an updated
True.
Version of the barcode system, correct?
Right, and what's happened is they're moving from the barcode system, which are the UPC codes, universal product codes. And so, for instance, you would see that barcode on, say you're buying a 20-ounce bottle of Coca-Cola. And so every 20-ounce bottle of Coca-Cola is going to have the exact same UPC code. And so, you know, okay, 20-ounce Coke, great. Well, now they're shifting to EPC, electronic product codes. And those are unique identifying numbers for each particular item. So you purchase a 20 fluid ounce Coca-Cola, and say you use your credit card to purchase that, well, that exact specific bottle of Coke will now be associated with you post-purchase. And so there are all sorts of, I'm sure your imagination can go, can follow that to its conclusion,
sure. Yeah.
How that can end up. But basically, so they're moving to these EPC codes because, and I'm sure you talked about this in transhumanism, this idea of the Internet of Things.
Yes.
Where basically everything is a node, if you will, eventually including us. So it starts with the pallets, it starts with the Coca-Cola bottles, and then it eventually ends up to humans.
That's right. Now, in the UK, a listener sent me this a while back here, just a week or so ago. Nestle were promoting basically this technology through their chocolate bars, I think it was, in the UK. They were going to have one RFID tag in one of the chocolate bars, or if it was several, I can't remember exactly. In any regard, if you had the chosen one, the chosen piece of chocolate, this team would arrive with a shopper and basically like a SWAT team surround you and give you, I don't know if it was £10,000 or something like that. So it's kind of funny to see how they're trying to like promote this as being some kind of new, awesome, cool, futuristic thing without any of the consequences that we are going to get into here in some detail. So that's pretty fun to view.
It's like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, exactly.
The golden, the not so golden ticket, I guess. Yeah. Oh wow, I'm going to have to look that story up. I hadn't heard that one.
Yeah, it's updated all the time. They have new things. They're packing this in. But I think it's a very important point that you mentioned, Katie, about the Internet of Things and the smart grid, the so-called smart system. And is there a way you know how RFID? The technology would be part of this. Then we have smart meters now. They claim we have smart phones, even smart cars, and these houses are smart. With fridges are connected to the internet, and every item it seems is either has a tag in itself, or it has connected directly to the internet and has an IP version 6 address. I think it is. They're updating it to now. And so, what is the consequence of some of this technology? If we get into some of the areas of where this becomes dangerous, should we say?
Yeah, it's always so refreshing to hear someone who gets it. So I'm so excited to talk to a radio host who really understands kind of what this in-game is. I can't tell you how excited I am to talk with you right now.
That's possible.
Right, and I always refer to all that smart technology as not so smart. So I'm like, not so smart cars, not so smart meters. But here it is. I mean, there's so many implications, the first of which is privacy. So, you know, I have, unfortunately, a smart meter on my house. And I know that data is being transmitted through radio waves, and someone with the right kind of reader device can intercept that signal and can be able to know what type of, they can monitor my energy usage. A lot of police, one of the reasons like law enforcement would want access to that technology, and I believe precedents have been set for this, is to say, oh, well, you've got, you know, too much energy usage, you must be growing marijuana, so we're going to come and break into your house, you know?
Wow.
And so it's things like that, you just go, it sounds ludicrous, but it really, you know, we have that Fourth Amendment right to, you know, need a warrant in order to search somebody's home. You have to have reasonable cause and a warrant, and now it's creating ways to get data without a warrant. And so that's really disconcerting. I would also say another end result of this is rationing. And any student of history would be able to say, well, wait a minute, if certain groups of people or certain individuals maybe run afoul of the government or whoever happens to be in power at the time, well, their electricity can be cut off.
Yeah.
You know, or, you know, you're not, you know, one of the things is, you know, maybe they're with the smart grid, hey, they're peak usage times. And so, you know what, Mrs. Jones, there's, you know, Comrade Jones, there's not enough time or energy on the grid. You can't run your dishwasher right now, or you can't run your washing machine right now. And so it's totally infringing on, the potential is there to infringe on an individual's right to live his or her life at the pace that he or she wishes to do it. If I want to wash my clothes, I want to wash my clothes.
Yeah.
But we'll move into rationing on that level, and or the government may be saying, you don't have the ability to do this.
So this technology would fit perfectly into Agenda 21, basically, mm-hmm. and it's like the infrastructure for globalization, I would say.
Oh, absolutely, and that's one of the things when you start looking at like these national ID cards with RFID embedded in them, that a number of countries, you know, the United States doesn't have this yet, but when you look at it, are they going to operate at just a frequency for the United States? No, it's set up so that they're able to be read and accessed by every country. And so that does exactly lead to globalism, for sure.
Indeed. There's another couple of components here. Another way they've tried to sell the chips and the RFID technology has been to implant, I think, primarily passive ships into the many animals for some time now. Most vets I've heard talk about it, consider it to be very beneficial. Here in Sweden, for instance, if you want to bring in a dog or a cat, you are by law obligated to ship it. And I think these are passive. Is that correct?
That is correct. They it's the near frequency communication NFC readers that are used for that, and Yes, they're doing that here in the United States, and Catherine has done a lot of work on that. I believe if you go, what is her website? It's antichips.com. There's so many great sites about this information. But what they've found, and there's some white papers available on this, is those microchips are causing malignant sarcomas in the pets.
Yes, indeed.
And so animals are dying. But, you know, one of the things when I talk to people about, you know, whether or not they have their chips, their pets chipped, you know, I have a dog and he does not have a microchip in him. But when I talk to other people, they're like, oh, it keeps my pet safe. And I said, really? If your pet ran out the door, if your dog ran out the door and down the street and your neighbor found him, is your neighbor going to pull out an RFID reader device and check to see if there's a chip in there, or is your pet, your neighbor going to look to see if your pet has a tag with your phone number on it, and they'll give you a call?
Well, there you go. Exactly. You know? Good point.
Yeah, that's one of those things. Is it's kind of creating. It's you know, yes, I can see where people would say, oh, this is so helpful at say the at a vet's office or at an animal shelter. Maybe there was a stray dog or a stray cat that was picked up. But they have to have the reader devices, and then they have to know which company and which database that all this data is connected to. So there are a lot of hoops for that. And then just me speaking personally, I always view that as just a large-scale scientific kind of experiment. How do these chips do, and how do they function when embedded into flesh?
Indeed. Well,
so we see they're causing tumors, and so they haven't embedded them in human beings yet on a large scale. But I personally view this as a test.
Indeed, and there are some test subjects out there that have done this. Kevin, oh, what's his name now? I forget that. We had him on the program, Kevin. Anyway, we'll dig that out later. But there's a couple of people who've tried this, and they're walking around in their offices and stuff, and the building is responding back to them. Hi, welcome for stepping in, and they think it's the coolest thing ever. But in any regard, hacking the chips or the information is also a potential dangerous area, so to speak, if you're not keen on sharing personal information. And again, if there's contained information on the ship directly, that's obviously even more dangerous. But still, as you said, Katie, if you have a reader or in some way can hack into it to attain the ID number, and then you have a process or a system where you can actually fetch this information, it's the same thing, basically. Hacking, has there been any work, as far as you know, about how easy it is to hack these things and the technology overall? Because that would be a big concern for me if I had something like that.
Sure. Yes, that kind of work has been done. Jonathan Westhues, Chris Padgett, they have done a lot of that type of work. They have videos on YouTube that you could go and any of your listeners could check out. I know Catherine was sharing with me recently about a time she had gone to speak before a state legislative body, and with permission, they had actually, in the elevator, cloned one of the staff members' RFID badges, and then were able to move around the building with that tag and access everything as that staff member with that badge. So, yes,
Wow.
it's very easy to clone or spoof those tags.
Indeed. By the way, I wanted to mention Kevin Warwick is his name. He's a professor of cybernetics at the University of Reading in England, and he's done some work on this and been kind of one of the test subjects for implantable microchips, and they're going ahead. But what's your view on this, Katie? Is this going really, really fast now, or is it still, because we don't see at this stage anyway, there's beginning to come rumors and that people are talking about it specifically for maybe elderly patients and in a hospital mm-hmm. setting. But on a mass scale, though, this is not something that's being talked about yet, implantable microchips, correct?
I think for a lot of lay people, it still seems very sci-fi. Kind of like, oh, no, that's just like in a movie, like Minority Report. That's not real.
Right.
you
yeah.
know, or it's no big deal. Come on. But I think for those of us who just have any exposure at all to this, we do see it ramping up. We do see it moving more and more quickly because the technology is becoming cheaper. You know, they're not just doing it at the pallet level. I think, what was it, a Walmart put in an order for 1 trillion, with a T, trillion tags, RFID tags.
Wow.
For the item level tagging.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it is ramping up. And then, again, like we're going to be talking with Andrea, I mean, they're already at that level where they're saying, hey, we really want to get this in the schools. And so they're pushing it there. They have attempted to do that in Chip the Elderly. There was an attempt in Florida, and thankfully a number of protesters showed up there and got that program to end. But again, I go back and say, let's look at history. When certain groups of people, whether it's the elderly or the young or maybe a certain religious group or a group that has a certain ideology, is marginalized, well, you know, it's just chipping them. Like, oh, it's okay. It's just prisoners. You know,
yeah.
It's them, so it's okay. So as we start to see certain segments of society be, affected by this chipping, that's how it's through that incrementalism that it's going to end up becoming, you know, ubiquitous.
Indeed,
almost
ubiquitous.
Unavoidable.
Yeah. No, you're right. It's for cattle, animals, and now, of course, they're beginning to look at students. So, Andrea, let's shift over to you now. And thank you for holding, by the way. And maybe you can tell our listeners your story, what school you go to, what has been happening there, and how long has this been going on for? How long has the talk about this been going on, Andrea?
Okay. Well, I go to John Jay Science and Engineering Academy here in San Antonio. And this is the first that I've ever heard of it. They sent a letter home 3 days before prep days when you go get your schedule and your ID and all that stuff. And I saw it and I was reading the paper and I was like, they're going to track me. And I was coming home from my great-grandmother's funeral in Michigan. So I was driving back home when my mom calls me and she goes, hey, they're putting microchips in your IDs now. So, you know, I get home later that night, and I read the letter, and I was like, man, I have to go get this thing tomorrow. So I'm at the school, and as they're handing them out, they're telling the students and the parents that they have to be worn around the neck at all times because they start taking attendance with it. You have to have it to buy lunch, go get a library book. And I go home, and I tell my dad all this stuff, and I told him, I was like, I'm not wearing it. I don't think so. I will not wear this. And he goes, well, why not, Mom? And then he already knew in his heart, because we have the same reason, but he wanted to know why I felt, you know, really stepped on, because I feel like they were stepping on my privacy, and he wanted to know why.
Yeah.
And I told him, I was like, I'm not a dog, you know, they go and chip their dogs as much as they want, but, you know, I'm not a dog, and they don't chip me. And I told my dad, I was like, this is kind of like the mark of the beast. And he goes, I'm so glad you said that, because that's exactly what I was thinking. In the book of Revelations, it talks about the mark of the beast. And the mark of the beast is a number, and you have to have it on your hand or your forehead. And you need that to participate in the economy in any way.
Mm-hmm.
And without my badge, as of Monday, I won't be able to do anything. And they will probably send me home, because Monday is the day that they're turning on all the systems. Everything is go on Monday. So I'm not going to be, I'm going to show up to school, but once again, without my badge. But Monday will probably be the day that they tell me, no, that you have to go home, or we're going to put you in school suspension, or
yeah,
something like that.
October 1st, so this coming Monday. And so what do you, have they said anything to you? What is going to happen if you don't have it? Have you looked at where you will be, I guess, limited in terms of where you can do or what you can, where you can go or what you can do?
We have the assistant vice principal, Mr. Mendoza. He made an announcement in the cafeteria. He said starting Monday, October 1st, that you will be required to wear it around your neck at all times. And if you do not have it on, around your neck, there will be consequences and the punishments will vary. And mind you, he's standing maybe 5 feet from me when he's saying this comment. And because all the administrators, I'm sure, are very well aware of the fact that I'm saying no to this. So he just happened to say it 5 feet from me, and I was like, okay, that's great. But I've been denied already the right to vote, because we have homecoming king and queen, and I went to go vote for homecoming queen, and they told me no. they told me that I needed my badge to vote.
Yeah, there we go. Now, you've had these ID cards before, correct? But now they've just implemented an upgrade to these with the RFID chip in it. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And how long has that test been going on for?
It just started this year when school came back in from summer break.
Yeah. Very interesting. Now, a little bit generally here, though, are you basically the only one in school talking about this, concerned about this?
For a while, I thought I was the only one, but then I found that there is a student who's a grade younger than I am, and he's actually going around and giving out flyers, and I have one of his flyers here. And we've been going around school, well, off campus, I'm sorry, because I'm not allowed to do this on school. I'm not allowed to protest on school grounds because I'll get in trouble. But we do have 324 signatures from students and parents and bus drivers and custodians who are also against this as well. We have teachers that have actually come to where we are across the street from the school saying that they don't like the program. They're not for it, but they have to be, otherwise they'll lose their job. And, but, of course, you know, the teachers can't sign and speak up because, you know, they'll lose their job and all that stuff. But I say I can't do this on school property because I tried to, I believe on Tuesday, I tried to go get signatures on the parking lot in the front of the school. And they called my name out and they said, "Excuse me, miss." And I turned around and they go, "Mr. Harris wants to see you." So I look over, Mr. Harris is the principal, John Jay. And so I look over and he is surrounded by cops and coaches and other administrators and he wants me to go over there. So I go over there, and he goes, "What are you doing?" And I was like, "Nothing." He goes, "What's in your hand?" Well, paperwork's there, and I was holding petitions and flyers for the rally that we were having that evening. And he goes, "No, those are petitions and flyers, and you've been handing them out all day." I was like, "Well, that's what they are, but I haven't been doing that all day." He goes, "Yes, you have." He goes, "You've been breaking the rules." And I was like, "I'm sorry, sir. I didn't know I was breaking the rules." And he goes, "Well, you're not allowed to do this on campus." And he goes, "I want your paperwork. Give me your paperwork." "No, sir. Let me call my dad. You can talk to him about this." "No, give me your paperwork, and then you can call your dad." And, you know, this is after hours. I'm doing my own thing, and he still will not let me use my cell phone to talk to my father. And I said, "No, sir, let me please call my dad." And he goes, "No, give me your paperwork, and then I'll be more than willing to talk to your dad." And I'm surrounded by cops and police officers and coaches and administrators, and they're all staring at me, and he goes, "Well, let's come over here." And I was freaking out. I was like, "Oh, no, he's going to take me to the officer's room, and he's going to give me a ticket." But he pulls me over maybe 5 feet from the crowd, and he goes, "Okay, you have two options." He goes, "You can give me your paperwork, and you can stay on campus as long as you like, or you can take your paperwork and go across the street with your dad, because he's watching my dad. He goes, you can go across the street with your dad, and you can do this, but you will not do it on school property." And these are his exact words. He goes, "You cannot go against something that the school strongly implements."
Yeah. How about that?
And, you know, Northside, my school district, they have a tendency to tell you that you don't have any rights, you're not a citizen until you turn 18, and until then, your rights are lived through by your parents. So you don't have any rights, and you have to do as they say.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, it's like the most dangerous thing you can do now is hand out a piece of paper with some information on it. It's incredible. I heard an interview, by the way, Andrea, with your father and yourself in it, Steve, your father's name, and he mentioned a little about the costs of this. Do you recall the numbers for how much this actually costs?
Yes. It was $525,000 just to get it for my school and the middle school that right down the street, and it's $136,000 to keep it running every year.
Wow, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, and that's just for two schools, but we have 112 schools in our district.
Have you heard anything about yet so far of whose idea this was? School board, principal, is it state or local government? Who suggested this?
It was through the superintendent of the district. I had heard that they had put the bid out a couple years ago, but they wanted to get rid of the old superintendent, so they waited until he retired so they can put in this new superintendent who they had already made the deal with, so they could say it was okay and put the program into use.
So do you know if this your school is now basically one of the test schools in America of doing this first, taking the first steps in this direction?
Yes, my school is my school and the middle school down the street are the they call it the beta test, you know, where the just the test subjects for this program.
Yeah, exactly. So what are some of the, if they even have talked about this in a school setting, what are some of the reasoning for this? Obviously, we understand that they do this incrementally. As you said, you've had ID cards before, so it won't be a too big leap for those who are not thinking about this to just get another little item in the card. For them, it maybe it's no big deal, but they don't understand the true consequences of this, as you have and as you've understood that there's reasons to worry for this. But the reasons why they say it, is this primarily for security, or why do they, how do they motivate this, Andrea?
Well, if you go to the webpage for my school district, they have their three reasons. It's to bring in revenue for the school district. It's for attendance and for safety. But, of course, these are issued by the school district. So they have to make the program sound good, and they have to make it sound like it's a great program and everybody should support it. The first reason is right. They want an extra $2 million, but this is just potential. There's no guarantee that they're going to get the extra $2 million for the school. They just want their money. And there's so many consequences. This technology is very easy to be hacked. Anybody can pick up on it. And I walk a mile home from my bus stop every afternoon, 5 o'clock. You know, there's so many people out. Some days there's nobody out. And I walk home a mile by myself. The familywatchdog.com, you can see how many offenders are in your neighborhood. I recently went and I looked and see how many offenders were around my neighborhood, and there's a lot more than I care to know.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, and it scares me because you can go buy an RFID reader on eBay for maybe $200, and boom, you can pick up my signal and follow me home. That is, you know, they say they want to secure us and all this stuff, but I don't feel protected with the technology that they're giving out. And they say, oh, we can only track you inside the four walls of the school. That is another lie. Because they told us, oh, we don't track you on the bus, I swear. Well, that is a lie in itself because my bus driver told me that they have an RFID scanner on our bus, too. I had seen a little black strip on the bus. It's a little black box looking thing, and it's on the bus driver's window. And I said, sir, what is that for? He goes, well, that's for that home project. And I was like, what do you mean? He goes, you know, those bad things. And I was like, oh, so that picks up the signal from the cars? And he's like, yeah. And, you know, Northside tells you several times, we do not track you on the bus. We promise it only works when you're on school.
Yeah.
So they're lying to us again. And there's so many more reasons for this technology to be not used in schools that I could sit here and talk to you for hours and hours about it.
Sure, yeah. They're obsessed with security, they claim firsthand, but then they have a blind spot to realizing that their good intentions actually might cause more harm, and many kids might actually end up in harm's way because of this technology, and they don't understand that there are very smart people out there with their computers and readers, as you say, that can hack these systems. And in most cases, as we know, security when it comes to computers is some of the most, it's the most insecure, basically, and it's very weak systems in many cases. So, yeah, it's not a good place to be. Now, I wanted to ask you about basically, there's one of the points, actually, you brought up. You said the first point was to bring in revenue for the school district. How do they figure that? To bring in more money for this?
Yes, they figured that by doing this new project, that they can increase their attendance by at least 1%. And by doing that, they'll bring in an extra potential, not even guaranteed, $2 million to the school district. And that's all that they've wanted is more money for their district.
Ah, okay. Yeah, how about that? Now, you partially come to this from a Christian perspective, as you mentioned, the mark of the beast that many people have interpreted as being the microchip implantable or whatnot. What are some of the other worry elements that you have about this? And also maybe you can tell us what you know about what type of information actually are on the cards, Andrea?
I have several worries. You know, as I stated, my battle is first and foremost are my religious beliefs, because I feel that this is the mark of the beast, and this is the conditioning, and this is how when I get older and have children, that when they do say, here, put this in your skin, you have to have it in order to have food and to live, I will tell my children, no. I mean, me and my family, we would rather starve to death than have to take the mark of the beast. I would rather get shunned and, you know, in trouble here on earth than not to have what I have in heaven, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And, you know, it's, there's privacy. There's so many things wrong with it. I mean, like I told you, they can follow me home, and they didn't even bother to ask the parents and the students about this. It was supposed to be brought up in a bond program, and you're supposed to vote on the bond. But at the last minute, they pulled it from the bond. That way the parents couldn't vote on it, because they knew that the parents would not stand for it. The parents would vote no. But, you know, I mean, there is parents who, their students and children, they go skip class, and, you know, those are the parents that will vote yes to the program. But for parents like my family and my friends who don't skip, and there's many, many others who don't, you know, they're doing it to watch a handful of students, well, then they should up their police officers. If they want to watch the children, then you can watch them out in the hallways. You can go guard the entrances of the school. That way nobody goes off campus. The spokesman for Northside, he recently said in an interview that John Jay has 200 security cameras, and John Jay is not that big of a school.
Mm.
You know, every 5 feet, there is another security camera. So you can't walk 10 seconds without having another camera look at you. And the cameras, they turn, so there's always getting a constant image of what's going on around it. So, you know, that's enough security as it is. Northside, there's just so many holes in their story. It's ridiculous.
So why do you think that they're pushing so hard to implement it? If we had the money reason, as you said, we can understand that. But as you said, that's not that much money, really, then. What are some of the other... Why are they doing it, do you think? What's your hunch?
Because they want to have total control of the students. Because they feel that because we said, yes, we'll be in the public school district, that they have every single right to control us. Because without it, you can't do anything in the school. You can't even attend school, really, without it. Because they want to be able to watch you at all times. And I feel like it's, you know, Big Brother just staying over my shoulder at all times.
Yeah, indeed. You're very brave for standing up against this. Again, I want to go back to the point of if there's any other students or parents that are concerned with this that you know of. And also, by the way, if you've asked any of the other students just generally what they think about this, or if they are concerned, I mean, it would be very interesting to hear if you ever would ask them how far they would go to accept this. I mean, as I said before, this is now just an ID card at the beginning. Then there is an RFID tag on it. How far away are we from an implantable chip in 10, 20 years from now, Andrea, for those students at that time?
Yeah, I have asked some friends, you know, how do you guys feel about it? And they're just like, oh, you know, it's not a big deal. It's just a badge. And then when I go and tell them my story, my feelings, my opinions on it, they just laugh in my face and say, oh, are you serious? It's not the mark of the beast. You don't know what you're talking about. You're crazy. And
yeah.
I actually had a student who sits behind me in one of my classes, and he kept dogging on me. I'm sorry. But he kept dogging on me, and he kept telling me that I was wrong, that I was crazy, and I just need to shut up and wear the badge. He told me, he was, well, I don't see how it steps on your religious beliefs, because I'm a Christian. Well, I'm sort of a Christian, and there's nothing in the Bible about this. So I told him, well, why don't you go read the book of Revelation, and then tomorrow I'll come back, and we can have a nice little discussion about this. But until then, I do not want to talk to you, because I know where I stand. If you don't know where you stand on this, then we just won't have this discussion. And ever since then, he has not brought it up with me. But I have had a bunch of students come up to me saying, oh, you're not wearing this, I'm not wearing it either. Awesome, high five, that's great. You know, I have a bunch of students who are on my side. I have so many of my friends who are with me, and then I have those who are against it, who are just like, oh, whatever, it's just a badge. I don't see what the big deal is. If it's bringing the school more money, then that's fine. I'm okay with it. but they don't realize that it's not even, like, the school doesn't have an absolute 100% guarantee of getting the money. And they don't see the bigger scheme of things. They don't realize that this is just the beginning. These are, you know, of course, my friends who are in extracurricular activities, you know, such as cheer and football and ROTC, and their coaches and their trainers and all this stuff, they will tell you, you have to wear it. You have to wear it all the time. It has to be on you, and you have to support the program. Otherwise, you can't be in our extracurricular activity.
Yeah.
I recently ran into a group of cheerleaders, and I asked them, would you guys be willing to sign? And they said, nope, I'm sorry, I can't. Coach DeLeon will get mad at me. I have to support the program, and I'm sorry.
Wow. Yeah, so lots of peer pressure, group psychology, and of course a bit of social engineering in there as well when they implement these things as always. So it must be difficult to stand up against it, but I believe definitely you're doing the right thing for doing so and following what you believe is right here. By the way, Andrea, this is obviously on things that are funded with tax money, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. There you go. So, Katie, I want to return to you a little bit here as well and get your comments on one of these things. Since Andrea told us that these are they're active, they're batteries in here, could these be harmful then to go around with these all day on, you know, on your close to your chest or heart or whatever they actually are?
Exactly. Yes. And one of the things that Caspian had submitted in their position paper, which I have to admit, it was signed on to by EPIC, you know, the Electronic Privacy Information Center, Privacy Rights Clearinghouse, EFF. We've got all these great organizations signing on saying, you know what, this school needs to stop this and do a safety impact study, because we know that the human body's electrical system, you know, is very fragile and delicate, and we don't know what impact this electromagnetic radiation that's emitted on these students may have on these developing bodies when they're completely bombarded for, what is it, 8 hours a day, even with low-level EMF, we don't know.
That's right. Wi-Fi, many kids have probably cell phones carrying that into school as well, so that just adds on top of it. So just yet another thing to add on to the pile of electromagnetic interference, for sure.
Yes.
So, Andrea, if you just refuse now, then how far would you be willing to go in terms of options, and what are some of the options that you know? I mean, yeah, we'll see. You'll see what happens on Monday, of course, and how they will treat you. But what do you think? What's your hunch about this? Will they say, you know, they will kick you out? I mean, will you be? Are they going to put pressure on you, do you think, for not following the so-called rules here?
You know, I do think they will put a bunch of pressure on me. I think that they will try to get me to change my stance. They've already tried to, my dad had a meeting with the deputy superintendent of my school district, and he said, well, we'll make her an empty badge. She can just wear the empty badge, but she has to fall in line, and these are his exact words. We want her to fall in line and support the program. In other words, he wants me to compromise what I've already said, and he wants me to look like a fool and just wear my badge. And they just want me to sell out and to be quiet about everything and just wear it and go along and live a happy life. But I can't stop, you know, because I'm not fighting this fight just for me. I'm fighting this fight for all 4,200 kids at John Jay and Jones Middle School, you know. It's not just about me. It's about everybody else who I'm trying to open their eyes to get my information out to them. And this school has already tried to pressure me into just wear the badge, it's okay, there's nothing wrong with it.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, I think on Monday they will try to put me in in-school suspension, or they'll call my parents to come pick me up because they don't want me at school. They'll write me up, they can suspend me. There's so many different punishments that they will try to use on me, which is all okay, because I would rather get in trouble with my school than be in trouble with the Lord.
Yeah, and I wonder if this can be, under the religious belief system. I know that, for instance, people have been managed to avoid, for example, vaccinations and certain other things because they consider it to be their religious belief. I don't understand why this shouldn't be applicable in the same area. Basically, maybe this is something that you would have to look into and fight further. Maybe this is something your father Steve is doing already to look into what some of the options are for fighting this.
Yeah, we've tried to get a hold of a civil rights attorneys who will take our case and help us win this fight against Northside, because we will probably wind up taking them to court. We have to go to two more levels. We have a level one meeting, I think, in about a week or so. And that's when Northside brings their attorney, and we have to bring our attorney. And the attorneys will sit there and talk and discuss things. And then after that, we have another meeting, which I'm not sure about the steps, but if that doesn't work out, we will be taking them to court. And especially since they've already denied me my right to vote, on Monday they will probably deny me the right to go to school and the right to buy my lunch. So Northside is just really hanging themselves out to dry, because they should not be pushing children just to look at the way that they're thinking.
Yeah.
In fact, they won't take my religious stance on this seriously. We had an assembly at the beginning of the school that goes over our rules and regulations and policies and attendance and all that stuff. And they said, you know, hats aren't allowed. But if you're a Muslim and you have to wear your head wrap, that's okay. Just come let us know, and we'll be more than willing to let you wear your head wrap.
Yep.
Me as a Christian, you won't let me not wear the badge because I feel it's the mark of the beast. So you'll go ahead and step on my religious beliefs, but you won't go ahead and step on theirs.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? What a double standard, huh?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Now, I know that this might not be the right answer. I think you're doing the right thing to, well, take the battle here on this level, but there is an option of obviously considering changing schools. Is that something you would want to do to avoid this? But obviously the extension of this, the long-term thinking here is that, well, if this is going to be brought into other schools across America, it might not be that many more years until it actually is mandatory in every single school in the U.S., in Europe, in other countries. So I think you're doing the right thing if you indeed are interested in following through and like fighting this on this level. But would you change school if you could?
I would not change schools. My dad has asked me several times if I want to go to the school right down the street from me. And I told him no. I want to stick at this school because my battle has already started here. I want to finish off my battle, and I want to stop it before it spreads to the school down the street from me, or the school across the highway.
Yeah. So you
I'm
might
not
be
fighting. I'm sorry?
I just wanted to say, so you might be doing, depending on how things turn out, you might be doing a lot of work for a lot of people who, at the end of this, then might actually, you know, get away because there will be a legal precedence for this that people can avoid it under a religious clause or something like that.
Yeah, and I'm doing a lot of work for a bunch of people because I feel it's the right thing to do. Because going on what Katie said, there's a lot of health risk involved as well. You know,
right?
I've also been told that it messes with your thyroid gland, and especially in women. It'll mess with your thyroid gland, you gain weight, and there's just so many problems with that. And, you know, for some women, it runs in their family, you know, thyroid problems and all that stuff, you know, causes cancer on a certain degree. We're all not aware of this because they have not researched it, they have not done a study. They just said, here's this dangerous technology that we want you to wear right next to your heart at all the time. You know, that could cause heart problems, it causes malignas, all that crazy stuff. And yet they want the students to wear it. And I'm trying to do this to prevent everybody else, you know. And there's a bunch of Christians out there who really haven't made the connection between this chip and our ID badges and the mark of the beast. And I'm trying to do this for those Christians so I can open their eyes and they say, oh, you're right. This is that. Thank you for letting me know. I want other people out there to be aware of this. And I want everybody else to see, you know, even not from a religious standpoint, I want them to be able to see they're stepping on my rights, my invasion of privacy, and my civil liberties. Northside does not care about what the Constitution says, and they don't care about what your Bible says.
Yeah, well, let me tell you, this system that they are building, that is a beast, believe me. I mean, you don't have to be a Christian to realize that. It is a monster in itself, and it could easily get out of hands. And considering, again, all the information that's flowing around out there, and if people don't take precautions to you know, protect themselves or just basically not want to be part of the system, they're indeed going to be sucked into this, a beast. I would call it that for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, Katie, do you want to comment a little bit more on this insanity? I mean, seriously, where is this where the money should be spent right now in the States and on these kinds of programs?
Well, you know, half a million taxpayer dollars is a ridiculous amount of money to be spending on this technology, absolutely. No, I think, you know, I personally have children, and I homeschool my children. My husband and I had both been educators in both public and private school settings, and we made the very conscious decision to homeschool our children because we were not willing to participate in this kind of activity. So this is a very sensitive area for me. But as what we see in the public schools is a lot of these kids are not educated. They're not well educated. There aren't enough teachers. The ratio is ridiculous. You can have over 30 students to a single teacher. You know, the ratio is just totally off. And there are so many other problems. They're taking away recess. They're taking away opportunity for arts, for music. And so it's not about really educating the children. It's about teaching them how to be basically slaves and prisoners.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think the money could be much better spent.
Is this a psychological battle, really, at the end of it, that they're trying to just get people to accommodate to this? And I mean, we have to bring into the discussion as well, considering all the cell phones out there and the way it's been promoted in the movies. This type of, you know, this type of technology doesn't seem so threatening anymore to many people, right?
Right. No, you're exactly right. And, you know, I think it is important to be able to kind of take a step back and really survey the landscape, the technology landscape. And we see these smartphones, you know, I don't know of anybody. I can't name anyone who doesn't have a cell phone. I can't think of anyone who doesn't have access to email, you know, that I interact with. And so I think of a number of people who have pets, and the majority of them are microchipped.
Yeah.
And so this type of technology is just becoming a normal part of daily life in not only American society, but in Europe and in other countries. Even, you know, when I was in Kazakhstan, you know, I saw this too.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's really becoming commonplace. And just like, you know, you had people back in the 1970s fighting the implementation of the barcode that we talked about earlier, saying, whoa, hold up. No, this isn't good. Everything's going to be tracked. You know, you don't hear people crying out about that anymore.
That is true. Yeah.
So I think it's really important. I was sharing with someone recently, I said, you know, just like Andrea is doing in her context, you know, I in my context say, no, I want to be known for being a voice who's speaking out and openly objecting to this technology being used to dehumanize people. That's ultimately what's happening. And we see it happening with the students, and it just breaks my heart.
So what would you recommend people to do if they don't want to be part of this? Is simply to walk away and not accept it and then see whatever, you know, the consequences of what this is? Or do they need to fight it legally in court systems and such? What do you think, Katie?
I think that it's a very complicated situation, and there are many ways to fight it. I think, especially like Andrea is talking about, for people who come from a biblical worldview, you know, I would say fight it with prayer. I would say speak to your churches, let them know what's going on so that the church can be active and participate in speaking out against this as well. For those people who see this as not necessarily the mark of the beast, but is laying the groundwork for that.
Yeah.
So empower the churches to speak up. I see that there are some people who may choose, like I did, to homeschool their children. But I don't think that's for everyone. I think that there are people who have different situations where government schooling is really the option that's available to them. And so I think that they need to fight where they're at. I absolutely believe in using whatever means are necessary within, you know, like Andrea and Steve are doing, they're working within the system. They have these different level 1, level 2, level 3 meetings. So they're working within that framework to make their voices heard. We also have a number of people from Dallas, from San Antonio, from Austin, showing up at the board meetings each month and taking their time saying, hey, we're going to speak out, we're going to show our signs, we're going to voice our opinions. I think people taking to social media is another great opportunity just to educate others and, again, make their opposition known. So I think it's multifaceted in the way to speak out against this technology. And even me as a homeschooling parent in North Texas, I'm still willing and have traveled down to San Antonio to speak out and fight for the rights of Andrea and her fellow students in their context. I think the great thing about it is that there's so many different ways to speak out. There's so many different ways to be active, and we're all gifted so differently. And we can contribute in different ways. And so I think by working together with our different gifts and talents and abilities, we can come at this from many different angles.
Indeed. Now, I have a few more questions here before we wrap things up for this time. I think we've covered a lot of good ground here so far, and we're going to keep on monitoring this, obviously, and see what happens on Monday, Andrea, and we're going to keep on following that story here from Sweden as well. But Katie, for a moment here, how much power does the school have in this on these kinds of questions, and how much power should they have, do you think?
You know, that's a really interesting question. I would say that the schools, based on the evidence that I see, and, you know, you can go to NISD for Northside Independent School District .net, go to schools and click on J, and then you'll see that there's a link to let the SMART pilot program, you know, student locator program, and there you can read the letter that was sent to the parents of the students about this technology. I think the schools think they have more power than they actually do. I think what we see happening, and we've seen this again, I go back to history, but I think it's so important we pay attention to history to know what decisions we need to make now.
Yep.
I think people readily abdicate their rights and freedoms to these school districts, and they don't have to. Back in the 1960s, there was a real famous case that went to the Supreme Court. It was Tinker versus the Des Moines, Community Independent School District. But basically, there were students who had chosen to wear black armbands in memory of people from all sides who were killed in the Vietnam War. And the school district took serious umbrage with that and told the students they weren't allowed to wear those armbands, that it was a distraction. They just came at these kids with all these different arguments. Oh, it's not your opinion. You're just parroting what your parents said. And so you're not thinking freely, and so you need to take this off. Well, it went to the Supreme Court, and the kids won. It's a very famous court case. But for First Amendment rights, that these kids had the freedom of speech, and that was able to be manifested through an armband that they wore to school. So all that to say that there is precedent that has been set that individuals, that students, that their First Amendment rights here in the United States, which are guaranteed by our Constitution, those don't end at the schoolroom doors.
Exactly.
That they continue on.
Yeah.
And so, so I think the power needs to be to the people. I think the people need to remember that they are free, they are sovereign individuals, and that they need to stand up for themselves.
Andrea, what would you like to see happen in the school, kind of a best scenario possible, that more students stand up against this and you manage to throw it out and stunt it so it doesn't, you know, continue to grow into other schools? Would that be the best scenario for you here?
Yeah, that's exactly what I would want to see. I want to see more students who are ready to stand up and fight for their rights and for their religious freedom and all of that. I want them to stand up. I want them to go to the board of trustees like I've been doing for the past 2 months, you know, when they have their monthly meeting. I want them to stand up and to show their faces. I want them to show their voice and make their voice be heard. I want this program pulled. I want Northside to say, yes, your students are right. Your students and parents and big groups like Caspian and We Are Change San Antonio, I want them all to, I want Northside to see every single one of us, and I want them to say, you guys are right. we'll pull this program. Sorry.
Yeah.
Program's done and over with.
Do you get the feeling that your other peers, students, understand the consequences of the technology? Or maybe, and I know you were handing out leaflets and all that, as you said, but within this, do you think it would help if there was more information given to all the students about how the technology could be exploited, how it actually would be, you know, lessen the security and how it could be used by people who don't have the students' best interest at heart, basically?
I wish there was more information, you know, that I could give to every single student. But, you know, I can only spend so many hours on school or after school across the street giving out flyers that have information.
Sure, yeah.
But see, Northside, they want you to believe that they're doing the right thing by you. They're just doing this for you. This is all for you and your students and for your parents. This is all awesome. Don't question anything I have to say. But, you know, there's students like me and others and who stand up and they're like, you're wrong. And I want more students to stand up and say, you guys are wrong. And I just wish there was some way I could speak to every single student and tell them all the cons of this, because really there are no pros. It's just this really negative thing that the school is trying to implement on us, which they shouldn't have any right to without our parents' consent.
Yeah, absolutely right. They've indeed invaded a lot into families and making the decisions, you know, for the families now. And I mean, it's a sad fact, but the idea is that most, you know, young kids and all that are spending more time with the school and with the people that are not part of the family than the actual family. So this is the way they've kind of managed to disassociate a lot of people from like traditional, you know, closely connected family values and everything like that. So it's a very worrying situation. But it's like what you said, Katie. The options. One of the ways out of that is to homeschool. But you know, if you were in Sweden and if this program was here, you wouldn't be allowed to do that because they banned it back in 2010. So you guys are lucky.
I know. Well, help me if I'm right here. That Sweden right now, the parents lost custody of their child. The going back to India, right? Was that in Sweden?
Oh yeah, sure. Krista Johansson is the father's name, and it's. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm forgetting the child's name right now. Dominic Johansson. That's his name.
Right.
Yeah. Indeed,
right.
We have.
That's because that's been going on for a couple of years, and I know that many people in the homeschooling community. Yeah, you just it boggles your mind, and
yeah.
You're just really. But ultimately, what that comes back to, just like you were saying, is that it's the state is usurping the authority of the parent, and you see the breaking up of the nuclear family unit, and it's immensely disconcerting.
That's right. I want to mention to listeners who didn't catch that program. By the way, we did a 2-hour interview with Kristi once on about this, about the case of Dominic, and it's very. Interesting. And I heard the last thing I heard is actually some good news, but now I haven't heard back again because there was talk about them getting finally their child back, you know, get Dominic back. But I haven't, there's still some issues. I think it's paperwork of something legal, which is causing them to not get their child back. But as you say, this is a big case. And if people want to get a sense and a feeling for what it is, when a country bans homeschooling and some of these consequences, look at that case because it's absolutely horrid, horrible.
It's awful. And, you know, that's one of the things I think about is so often here in the United States, you hear people saying, oh, I wish we were more like Europe.
Yeah,
and I immediately think to homeschooling and I'm like, no, no, you don't.
No, it's
no,
true.
Fight
it's true.
For your freedoms.
Yeah, I've been trying to alert many Americans who have been propagandized into believing that Sweden system, the Nordic model or the Swedish model is like the way to go for America. But the fact is that most people who have never been here, they might think it's great, but every single American that I know of and every Brit as well, actually, that has been to Sweden and seen the system up close, they said, well, I was actually kind of a lefty or more liberal when I came to Sweden. But now going out of it, many people leave to begin with. But the fact is that they've turned the other way and they've seen that it's not a good system. I mean, the welfare state here crashed back in the 90s. So that's speak volumes in itself of what has happened consequently. So
that's right.
Anyway.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to make sure that your listeners know that we're currently building basically a clearinghouse, a website, chipfreeschools.com. We're currently trying to add more resources so that students, parents, community members will be able to go there and get information on the dangers of RFID, the history of RFID, you know, where they can learn that, hey, there were parents in the state of California in 2005 who stood up and said no to the implementation of this kind of program, and they won. You know, so we're working on that, developing that website, chipfreeschools.com. And another great website is spychips.com.
Yep.
And that's associated with Catherine's book that she had co-written with Liz McIntyre, basically really breaking down. And they wrote this, I think, about 6 years ago.
Yeah.
And everything they talked about in that book is coming to fruition now. It's kind of eerie.
Indeed. No, you're right.
When you read it.
Yeah, exactly.
And the I was going to also mention, as far as the animal microchipping, chipmenot.org, chipmenot.org is the website about the adverse effects of microchipping pets.
Excellent. These are three websites that we're going to have linked up on our end on redicecreations.com, chipfreeschools.com, spychips.com, and also chipmenot.org. Andrea, I want to go back to you for a moment here before we wrap things up. Are you going to keep Katie and them kind of posted on what's going on, or is there anywhere people can turn to find out more about what's going to happen now for you?
Yes, I keep Katie and Liz and Catherine all informed. We're all very close now. We have each other's numbers and emails and Facebooks. Speaking of Facebook, there is a Facebook page where people can go and continue to see the story progress. It's called Students Against RFID Tracking, and that's a Facebook page. That's me, and another student actually created that page about a month ago. We created that page, and that page, after we did the Alex Jones show, just skyrocketed.
Mm.
And we have interviews on there. We have information. We have links, actually, to chipfreeschools.com and SpyChips. And if anybody at all, you know, around the world wants to know more about this, there's that website. They can always go to that, and it's constantly being updated, and people are constantly posting, and there's so much more information about this on that website.
Okay, that's great. Now, keep on fighting, Andrea, of course, and stand up for what you personally believe in. I think it's only through the individual initiative that we can help out the non-thinking masses, in this case, that have been propagandized into believing this and so many other things to be beneficial. So keep on doing what you're doing. You're very brave. And thank you, Andrea, for taking the time talking with us here today. We really appreciate that.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
And thank you to you as well, Katie. Is there anything else you want to give out now in the last few minutes before we say bye and thanks for this time?
I think that we kind of covered the main sites. There's another, if they want to look at the history, if your listeners are interested kind of in the history of Caspian, there's a great, like, Web 1.0 website, nocards.org, and that's Catherine's original website, where she was basically studying the loyalty cards that were issued to people at grocery stores or supermarkets. And how all that data was tracked as people made purchases, and what can happen. You know, you link that up with your smart refrigerator, right?
Yeah.
It tells you when the milk's low.
Yeah, exactly. So we don't have to use our brains anymore at all. It's perfect, you know?
Yeah, it's great. No thinking involved.
Oh, wow. So. Yeah, it's amazing. NoCard.org. That's great. A lot of good websites here for where people can find out more. And this is just a kind of an introduction, obviously, we've done here today on this topic. But I want to thank both of you again. And thanks, Katie, for spending some time with us. It's been very enlightening. And good luck in your fights against this, of course. And keep up the good work.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
We did this recording on the Saturday before the Monday Andrea went back to school, as she mentioned during the program. We have not yet heard anything as to her situation at the school, but we'll keep you posted when we hear more about the developments and what has happened. All right, but that's our program here for today. Stay tuned to redicecreations.com for more. We have Mark Gaffney on his book Black 9/11. Up next, we're going to talk about financial issues and insider trading surrounding September 11. For more upcoming guests, please take a look in our radio archive. For now, thank you for listening. We'll talk to you soon.